Irivadadari. Yashoda nandana braja jana ranjana Yashoda nandana braja jana ranjana Yamuna tiravana cha Yamuna Kiravana Chari Jai Radha Madhava Sangha Bihari Kapijana Vallabha Giri Varadhari Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Randana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Randana Yamuna Tiravana Kapijana Vallabha Giri Varadhari Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Rajagana Rangana Jamuna Tiravana Chari Jaya Radha Madhava Sangha Bihari Kapijana Vallabha Giri Varadhari Jayam Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivachyata Acharya Ashtotara Sakta Shishimad His Divine Grace is Bhakti Vedanta Swami Shri Prabhupada Ki Ananta Kota Vaishnavinda Ki Iskand Founder Acharya's Divine Grace Shri Prabhupada Ki Gaur Premanandi All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Namo Vishnu Varaya Krishna Prasaya Vatava. Srimade Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityanamani. Namaste Sarasati Devi Gaura Bani Vacharare. Nirvishesha Sunyavari Pasachi Devi Sakala. Hare Krishna. Thank you all for coming this evening. We'll be reading a section of Bhagavad Gita from the second chapter. Yeah, 232. But before reading the verse, I just want to introduce the subject matter a bit so that you're familiar with it and can think about the subject matter as we read the verses in Srila Prabhupada's purports. And so I have a question for all of you before we begin. Question is, how relevant are we? We're sitting here having our Sunday feast program, But how relevant are we to things going on in the world around us? Or are we meant to be relevant to things that are going around us in the public, the general public? Is Bhagavad Gita relevant?
Yes.
Well, we're going to explore that question. Because when I joined ISKCON, of course, I think we've always been relevant in one way, at one level of reality. But there are many levels of reality, and the level that I was at when I joined was a political reality. And so there were devotees, two of whom are members of our community, Balavanta Prabhu and Amarendra Prabhu, who were political activists. And they had a political party called the In God We Trust Party for Purified Leaders. Has anybody heard about that before? Has anybody ever heard of that? Yeah. We'll know if we're relevant if we remember it ourselves. Yeah, well, they had this political party, and they were running for political office in various places because they believed very much that we're relevant, Hare Krishna devotees are relevant to what's happening in society around us today, and that Bhagavad Gita is relevant. One of the things that finally convinced me to move into the temple was that I always had this question in my mind about what makes a classic book, classic literature, what makes it classic? Why do they call it classic? What puts it in that characterization of being classic? And the answer to that is that it's relevant to people, in all places, at all times. It has principles, it has ideas that you can learn. No matter who you are, where you are, it talks about the human experience. So it's relevant. It's relevant to everyone. Bhagavad Gita is like that. Bhagavad Gita is a classic literature. We used to distribute on the college campuses to professors. This is a classic literature, Bhagavad Gita, meaning that it's relevant in all places, all times, all subject matters. So we go to all the different departments at a university. Because it was relevant. So the question is, how relevant are we as Hare Krishna devotees, as preachers of Krishna consciousness in the world today, as followers of Srila Prabhupada, as representatives of Sri Krishna, how relative are we, and how relative is the message that Krishna has for everyone in Bhagavad Gita? So we're going to talk about that a bit, but we'll read from the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. A section that's not talked about that much, but is very relevant to these questions that we raised. Text number 33. We'll put it up on the board up there so we can explain it. Atache tvam imam dharmyam sangramam na karishyasi tatasva dharmam kirtitim cha Yidva papam avapyasi. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. If, however, you do not perform your religious duty of fighting, then you will certainly incur sins for neglecting your duties and thus lose your reputation as a fighter. Purport. Arjuna was a famous fighter, and he attained fame by fighting many great demigods, including even Lord Shiva. After fighting and defeating Lord Shiva in the dress of a hunter, Arjuna pleased the Lord and received as a reward a weapon called Pasupata Astra. Everyone knew that he was a great warrior. Even Dronacharya gave him benedictions and awarded him the special weapon by which he could kill even his teacher. So he was credited with so many military certificates from many authorities, including his adoptive father, Indra, the heavenly king. But if he abandoned the battle, not only would he neglect his specific duty as a Kshatriya, but he would lose all his fame and good name and thus prepare his royal road to hell. In other words, he would go to hell not by fighting, but by withdrawing from the battle. Omagana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurnoitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guru Yama. So my questions about relevance were actually based in a specific instance. Here we have Arjuna being inspired by Krishna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra to take part in holy warfare. And so the Bhagavad Gita was spoken on a battlefield. And it reached the battlefield only after much political intrigue and agitation. That's where they are. That's where the instructions of Bhagavad Gita are being given. Now, how relevant is that to our current situation today? We've seen over the last several days unprecedented political turmoil happening in this country itself. So how much are the instructions of an ancient text, Bhagavad Gita, to that current situation that we're still living through today? Is there anything in Bhagavad Gita that's relevant that can be learned as a lesson and as a light as we move forward from here? That's the kind of relevance Bhagavad Gita is meant to have. That's why it was spoken on the battlefield. So we should understand this ourselves, the relevance, study it, which we'll do through some questioning this evening, and not be afraid to present it as a solution. The world today is bankrupt for solutions. Practically speaking, the government is all tied up. It can't move this way or that way because they have no solutions. It's not strange or odd or unnatural that they'd be in this situation, because Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that if you ignore him, specifically speaking to Arjuna, if you ignore me and don't fight, then you'll meet ruination. So as long as Krishna's instructions aren't made available to government officials, to people in general, then only frustration is going to result. No real solution. Bhagavad Gita is meant to be relevant. It's not just a matter of right, it's right or wrong, or politically acceptable or not politically acceptable. It's not about that. Bhagavad Gita is much deeper than that. Its teachings are much deeper than superficial right and wrong. Teachings of Bhagavad Gita go to the very essence and purpose of our lives here in this material world. Our lives as spirit souls, I should emphasize, not our lives as these bodies, but our lives as spirit souls. And attaining the goal of life, the ultimate goal of life, which is to get out of this material world. That's the depth that's involved in Krishna's instructions. And if we go that deep, if we work on that level of reality, then other levels of reality and the relief they seek are automatically included. Prabhupada gave the example like $100. If you have a $100 bill, then all of your $10 problems are solved by having that $100 bill. So how Krishna is relevant to what's going on around us today is very important, not just so that Hinduism becomes a popular religion or whatever. No, for the solving the real crisis, the real purpose of life, which is to get out of this material world. So, specifically, how can we make, or how can we understand Bhagavad Gita to be relevant to questions which you read in the newspaper or online? I don't know if anybody reads the newspaper anymore, but online. So, let's focus on one particular thing that Krishna is focusing on in this verse in Bhagavad Gita. In Bhagavad Gita, in this section, there are several verses where Krishna is using this idea of honor, this idea of honor as a method to motivate Arjuna. He says in the verse we read that not only will you be neglecting your duties, but you'll lose your reputation as a fighter. Actually, honor, or let's broaden it out a bit, character, because character is always relevant, isn't it? Character is always relevant, no matter what we're doing, any place, time, person, situation. The character with which the people are acting is very, very important. And so, honor is such a character trait. And for a kshatriya like Arjuna, honor is very, very important. Honor was very, very important. Therefore, Krishna uses it in several verses in this section of Bhagavad Gita to call out Arjuna. He's calling him out. Are you going to be a coward? How can you be a coward? How can you give up the good reputation you've already gained from your heroism? He's calling him out like that, using this character trait of honor. But let's back up a little bit, because you might think, well, he's motivating him with pride. Where's the spiritual thing here? I thought pride was a bad thing in spiritual circles. Well, you're saying that Krishna is using that call to pride to get his will done? Well, yes, he is, but there's a reason why. There's a reason why. Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita there's four classes of men in society. There's the intellectual class, the Brahmins. There's the administrator, or the warrior class, the Kshatriyas. There's the business class, agriculturalists, Vaishya. And there's the labor class, Sudras. These four different inclinations in people are part of an overall system called the Varnashram, by following which we can get out of this material world. Now, each of those four different types of people have a different calling, internal yearning, affiliation, a feeling of comfort with different types of activities that, when they work together, produce a functioning society. A functioning society is based on individuals doing their work. And therefore, Bhagavad Gita calls them duties. We have these duties to perform in a system given by the Supreme Lord, which will produce a happy, productive life for all beings. For all beings. Right now we have pullings and no cooperation between these four classes of men. And what's the result? Pollution, scarcity, pandemic. So many miseries come on the living beings, the human beings, not just humans, all beings. They come upon them when the system isn't working correctly. That's all. It's simple. There's a system given by God that if we follow, he explains in Bhagavad Gita, then all necessities of man will be supplied. That system is there. The problem is that we don't follow. We don't follow. So it's not a matter of faith and God and religion. It's a matter of following the natural inclinations that each and every one of us display. Following the natural inclinations. And so for the Kshatriyas, there are natural inclinations, which if they're followed, help to make the whole system function. So when Krishna is using honor or dishonor to motivate Krishna Arjuna in this section of Bhagavad Gita, he's advocating the Varnashram system. Not that he's just trying to make Arjuna puffed up, thinking he's great or something. And that is a motivation for doing what he's doing. But no, act according to your duty. So that's how Krishna's trying to inspire him. So what are some of the characteristics by which a Kshatriya or leader works? That's what we have to explain. So I'm going to ask you to give me your suggestions so you can participate in this. But let me start out by saying Kshatriya. The word, the Sanskrit word, can be broken down into two parts. Sat, shat, which means harm, and triyate, means to deliver from. And so the Kshatriya, one of his main duties is to deliver the other people in this system of society, to deliver them from harm, to protect them. That's the Kshatriya's role. To protect people, to protect animals, to do his part, his or her part, to make sure that the functioning of the society works. That's called duty. Now, to do that duty of a Kshatriya properly, we have to understand where it's coming from in terms of the modes of nature. It's coming primarily from the mode of passion. And the mode of passion has certain characteristics which some of you may recognize amongst yourself. Because Kshatriya nature involves having to protect, which involves having to fight, there are certain characteristics which help that to function. Can anybody offer some suggestions what they might be? Anybody? Yes?
Courage.
Courage, yes. Courage in battle particularly. There's a lot of courages we need in life, yeah, and we can all see them as battles, but specifically courage in battle. Huh?
Power.
Power, yes. To have the ability to do something, you need power, yes.
Heroism.
Heroism, yes.
Skill. Yes.
Discipline,
yes. Not running away from the battlefield, yeah. All these things give us some idea of the nature of that person. Now, one of those things that, well, I did hear it. I was about to say that I didn't hear honor, which is the subject matter that we're talking about specifically. But I did hear honor, because what does honor mean? You said heroism, right? Didn't you say heroism?
I said skill.
Sham said heroism. What did you say?
Skill.
Okay. In the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the qualities of work of the Kshatriyas are given. And there we find heroism, shouryam, and leadership, Ishwara Bhav. We have a sort of a subculture in ISKCON, so the Ishwara Bhav nature, we assign it to anybody that goes around trying to boss everybody around. And is exercising his Ishwara Bhav. But heroism and leadership, Soyam and Ishwara Bhav, these things combine to be honor. A Kshatriya is motivated and nourished by feelings of heroism, being the hero, and leadership. Taking the responsibility of leadership. It takes someone willing, or maybe even desirous a little bit, of getting the honor, getting the glory to do something. So to the proper degree, this is okay, it's necessary, because it functions in a way that makes sure that the Kshatriyas do their role in society. So it's all right that they be honored. It's all right that they be honored. Just back a minute to those qualities. Let me add some of the ones I had here listed as the qualities of a Kshatriya. Willpower, aggression, energy, seeking honor, power, status, and martial and political temperament. So these are things which characterize honor, and to the proper degree, they are beneficial and useful for human society to function. It's not that everybody has to be stripped of all honor, or everyone has the same rank. There may be others who are ready to step forward. And so, honor can be used to motivate them. Indeed, we find, I think, if you go around the world and you see any country, people are the same all over the world. They're motivated in the same way. They have these military parades where they parade their missiles and soldiers and arms, and the whole country gets very enthused by that, and they're instilled with a feeling of honor and respect and love for their country. So it's a natural thing. This honor is a natural thing. And Krishna is right in chiding Arjuna that he'll lose his reputation as a fighter. He goes on to say, people will speak of your infamy, and for a respectable person, dishonor is worse than death. The great generals who highly esteem your name and fame will think you have left the battlefield out of fear only, and thus they will consider you insignificant. Your enemies will describe you in many unkind words and scorn your ability. What could be more painful for you? So in other words, his honor would be hurt. He'd be dishonored. And Krishna says that that's for one who's honored, dishonor is worse than death. Now, again, I want to caution you, I'm not talking about a over-hyped false ego. We see that a lot in the political situation today. And again, in terms of the political situation in this country today, it's sort of fostered by someone who this need for honor is on steroids. Can't get enough. It's interesting. This honor is born from the motive passion. And there are other things born from the motive passion as well, like lust. Now, just like lust, honor and power can be very seductive. And we see people succumb to it all the time. We may succumb to it ourselves from time to time. So this seeking honor can go overboard. And so therefore, it has to be very carefully dealt with. Just like any of the anger or lust, greed, all of these things have to be very closely monitored, balanced, used properly because of the seductive nature of these things. They suck us in and we misuse them. So that's not what's being talked here about honor and all the things that are Christians using to motivate Arjuna. He's not talking about going overboard and becoming seduced by all these things. He's talking about the proper use of these things. The proper use. Indeed, he's talking about dharmaraj. Being a king motivated by dharma and utilizing even honor, the desire for honor, in the proper execution of dharma to benefit society. That's what Krishna's talking about. And so we have to be very careful to make that distinction because, as I say, we see in the present situation the leader overemphasizes individual honor as opposed to keeping it within bounds and regulations that could be respected by society, other members of society, who, by the way, we recall are dependent to work as a team together. Why does it break down? When one person thinks that it's all meant for them. The Srimad Bhagavatam is full of stories about kings who have misused honor and power in a selfish way as opposed to a selfless way, which is dharmaraj. Isn't it? Marajvena. You think you have some trouble with leaders now? I mean, read the Bhagavatam. It really gave you some trouble. They're very, very cruel. And so we have to deal with this very, very carefully. And again, this is a part of a classic literature. It applies now. It's not like it doesn't apply to the current situation that's going on and may play out over the next few days in Washington, D.C. It's very relevant. Character is always relevant. And how character is displayed and how power and honor are utilized make all the difference. Now, I want to explain another aspect of honor. Because honor, there are two things about honor that we should understand. One, we've just been explaining how it's necessary to motivate kshatriyas to do their role in the dharma, and that's all controlled by dharma. But in addition to seeking that honor and executing one's service in relation to that, there's also another honor that has to be considered. And that is honoring the system. The system may give you honor, But you have to honor the system. Sometimes if you go to court or any government office, you may have to address the judge. How do you address the judge? Your Honor. I think in England they said, my Lord. More. But Your Honor, you have to be able to give honor to others. Why do they do that with the judge? Because there's respect, there's honor for the system, the institution, the country. So not only you may get some honor to motivate your service, quite closely relegated or regulated, but you also have to give honor, have to honor the system, honor others. If you don't, that's another fault. It's another fault. So therefore we call the judge Your Honor, or the Honorable XYZ. So, honor for oneself is a problem. Honor should be used in a term of allegiance for doing the rightful thing for the society at large. So these are points of importance and relevance to current situations. And I think if we study Bhagavad Gita in that regard, we can study Bhagavad Gita on many different levels. And we should study it, and we should know it on many different levels. But this is a very important one, because it keeps us in a relevant position to give advice to society around us. And that's ultimately part of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy and his instructions when he asked us to help him distribute widely love of God. If it's not done in a way that's relevant to what people are currently suffering, then they'll say, yes, 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 you know, religion, okay, is fine, right? But what does it have to do with me right now and the problems that I'm going through? We have to make ourselves relevant. We have a very nice situation here with our temple and the countryside. It's very beautiful. We come here, we find peace and satisfaction, happiness. But that's one part of our life. We're also meant to give to others solutions to the problems that they're suffering with. Even if they be at the highest realms of government in this country, it doesn't mean that what we do is irrelevant to them. We should understand how it's relative. And Krishna will then give us opportunities to explain that to others. And that can make all the difference in the life of an individual or the functioning of a society, a worldwide society. So think of yourselves like that. Be relevant. Take the message as relevant and give it to others. So does anyone have comments, questions? Yes.
On one hand, Krishna spoke about sojo, virjo, tejo, dhriti, juddhicho, palayanam. You read those qualities. But he didn't mention there that has to be representative of him protecting the brahmanas. But in that sloka, it's not there. But that's the main primary base, foundation of Kshatriya, ruler. How to understand?
Well,
I mean, Duryodhan had those qualities that you explained. Many, many. Ravana also had this. He was very good ruler. Everybody was kind of satisfied with his power.
Well, as I mentioned, Krishna works and instructs on many different levels simultaneously. And so he may, through his instructions, someone may run the kingdom very nicely, very orderly. But that's not all that Krishna wants. Krishna wants the knowledge of him and the love and affection that he brings to the world. He wants that also emphasized and developed. A righteous king he wants. Because although, as I was explaining, although one may accomplish something, these things are very seductive. Tell me that Duryodhana was not seduced by power. If he was satisfied doing his duty as part of the Varnashram system, so that everyone was satisfied and the Lord's will took place, then why would he act in such an abominable way to his own relatives? Why would he let his greed for power, his thirst for power, overcome him to the point where he couldn't even give, he said he wouldn't even give the Pandavas enough land to put a pen on. It doesn't sound like someone you want entrusted with a lot of power. Anytime there's a lot of power and the great to do, the facility to do harm, you have to regulate that. You have to regulate that. And how does a king regulate it? By having advisors, by having good character. These are things meant to regulate and check, prevent the unchecked use of power and desire for honor. And so if someone doesn't display that, then they're not getting that level of the teachings of Krishna, although they may be superficially doing other duties well.
Like Yudhishthira Maharaj and all the great rulers that we glorify, King Parikshit, they draw the happiness of their existence from spiritual source, not from ruling with all those qualities. Mm-hmm. But whereas the others draw, because it's difficult to control not one more. Am I right?
Yes. Yes. Again, there's different levels that they're inspired by. If we draw our enthusiasm, our happiness, our satisfaction from material sources, we're bound to be frustrated. Yudhisthira, for instance, we know from the history of Srimad Bhagavatam, he was very hesitant in his ruling. He was feeling that it was because of him so many people. Are those symptoms of weakness? Or undesirable symptoms to have in the king? No. Krishna actually made the arrangement for Yudhisthira to go and hear from Bhishma Dev on the bed of arrows so that he could make use of that receptive state of mind that he had. And so Krishna, we'll see that great devotees make the best kings in this world. Because they have the more complete package that benefits everybody. Anything else? Yes? Madhamati. You don't recognize your own mother-in-law?
I thought about that, what these rulers, when they're not... they're not devotees, they fail to honor the system. So like you were talking about, there are two aspects. So for example, with Duryodhana also, he failed to honor the system, and that's why he didn't want to give, you know, the land to others, or even wanting to rule when he's not meant to really rule. So it seems like that's where the fault happens.
Mm.
So appreciating the two aspects.
Thank you. Anything else anyone has?
Thank you, Prabhu, for your class. I was wondering, like, what are your thoughts about the population who is under the rule of somebody who's abusing the power, who's not honoring the system? And I don't mean this to be a political question. I mean it more like, you know, how, I guess sometimes there's a feeling of like, just throughout the Varnashram system, because in this Kali Yuga we're all Shudras and none of us are qualified anyway, and how do we even know what our own qualifications are, and I don't even know what my own Varna is, what to expect of anybody else. And I guess my sense is that, like, how do we understand, like, we can see leaders, world leaders nowadays, that don't seem very qualified to be in that position. And I guess for looking into my own heart, how do I understand even what my own Dharma is and be able to follow that with honor, with whatever capacity that I can, even if I'm a Shudra, and owning it and being okay with it, and not feeling too upset, I guess, by the leadership. Not sure where this is going, but...
Yeah, well, I appreciate your question, and I think I can understand. Well, maybe I can't understand where it's going, but I think I have an answer. For an answer, I'll just take it back to something that happened right within our own ISKCON society. Many years ago, there was a leader in a temple who was not following properly, and the matter was brought to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada corrected the situation, removing that leader. But then the question came up, well, what about all of those that were under that person, and they were doing, you know, what was their position? And Prabhupada indicated that Krishna understood the situation and protected them, so that by following the duties, their duties under that leader, Krishna protected them, so they weren't put in jeopardy, their spiritual lives weren't hurt by doing that. And so Krishna protects his devotees. Now what you are describing is Kali Yuga to the T. No one knows what their varna is. No one following the ashrams is difficult. So many things are there. But there's Nam Sankirtan. And that's meant for everybody. No varna ashram consideration. This is meant for everybody to protect, get in the protection of the holy name of the Lord. And so we take shelter of Nam Sankirtan. And Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they'll work out any technical difficulties that have to be there. We just chant Hare Krishna. Anything else before we stop here? Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.